Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson. Chris Bessler out today, but joining me in the studio this morning is Zach Hagedon, the editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, Jack.
And welcome back to the studio. We've had you on the phone a couple of times in your recovery period.
That's right.
Yes.
It's nice to be back here, clumping down in my surgical boot.
Yes. You walked all the way down on one foot.
I did it all by myself.
Thank you very much for the effort. Well, let's see. Let's run down the news of the week. In state of Idaho news, and national news for that matter, a federal judge on June 16th granted a request for a preliminary injunction blocking enforcement of HB 752, the Idaho state law that was passed in the past legislative session, threatening transgender people with up to 5 years in prison for using public restrooms consistent with their gender identity. It was set to go into that 752 was set to go into effect on July 1st. The order limits enforcement of the law to protect access to some restrooms while the case challenging it proceeds. The district court granted the plaintiff's requested relief, which was tailored to the most acute circumstances in which HB 752 enforcement would cause harm. The preliminary injunction prevents the Idaho Attorney General and all 44 county prosecutors from enforcing this law whenever the covered restroom designated for use by sex is a single-user facility or when a single-user restroom is not available because no single-user restroom exists on the same floor as the multi-user facilities, or all single-user restrooms on the same floor are occupied or not in service. Yes, so a narrow injunction, but the case is ongoing. The lake, Lake Ponderay, that is currently observed to be at 2,062.23 feet, the surface of the lake above sea level. That's at Hope, where the observation center is, and that is just a few inches shy of full summer pool here on June 19th. Panhandle Health District did pass their budget with some changes to clinical services. Sansore Mitchell has an excellent story on it in the Reader this week, and we're going to have her in here someday to talk about the Panhandle Health District, because I think she's covering that more closely than any other reporter locally or anywhere. Averill Hospitality was granted a one-year permit extension for their Bridge Street Resort Hotel project by the Planning and Zoning Commission here in the city of Sandpoint. That is the City Beach, or the hotel right next to City Beach here in Sandpoint. And Zach wrote the story on that in this week's paper, which we'll be talking about in just a moment. Also, going into effect on July 1st, here's a reminder that the new parking fees will go into effect next month. That is, we're just 10-11 days away from when that goes into effect. You can go to the City of Sandpoint's website to get yourself a new parking permit if you are a county resident or a city resident. The rates are different for county residents and city residents. There have been some, well, actually, Zach, you'd know. I was just going to announce that I've heard anecdotally that there have been a couple of hiccups, but it's mostly going smoothly. How's the permit rollout going out of the city? Do you know?
If you've heard of hiccups, then
that's the first.
Those are your hiccups that you heard. I didn't hear anything.
Anecdotal.
That's anecdotal. What I said. Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh. As far as I'm aware, it's operating as it should. The last I heard, we were going to see some of the parking kiosks come up before July 1st.
Yeah. No, I just there was a if you have perhaps you have multiple addresses, if you have a, you know, if you have a PO box where you receive your mail, but your residence is in the city, and that there's you need to be able to actually receive the permit at the address where the permit comes through the mail, so that's the that was the only hiccup that I heard about.
I imagine we'll probably see some wrinkles, as it actually goes into effect, and we start using it. But
Yeah. But that's not in effect yet. We're less than 2 weeks away. In other, I guess, vehicular news, transit news, the Spot Bus has opened a new route north-south across the Long Bridge. This is to serve pedestrians who are now blocked from using the Long Bridge walking path, or the pedestrian bridge is completely closed at this time by the Idaho Transportation Department. So there is no pedestrian option for transiting across the water between Sagal and Sandpoint. But there is now a bus route, the Sandpoint Pondere Transit Spot Bus has opened that route. And in local community theater news, the Panada Theater is going to be seeking, I guess, their fifth executive director since 2021, as Heather White has resigned from her role at the theater. This follows, if you read last week's Reader, there was an article about a contentious board meeting that took place on June 6th, and then the resignation came on last Friday. So the Panada Theater is once again without an executive director at this time. Let's see. Did I miss anything in this week's paper? I'm sure I did, but that's enough to get us started. Zach, your big piece this week is on Avril Hospitality, which purchased what has been known as the Best Western Edgewater Hotel down adjacent to City Beach, and they made that. I think that purchase was in 2022, right?
If I remember correctly,
yeah,
it was announced that they were going to do this project in 2024.
Okay, and that's 2 years ago now that they received their first conditional use permit from the city of Sandpoint to do some major construction. It's not a mere, I guess, their permit is not for a mere kind of refurbishment of the existing hotel. It's for a complete demolition and brand new structure, which I believe was going to be three stories high and somewhat larger, taller facility.
Well, something like 300,000 square feet, I think.
Yeah.
296,250 square feet.
But as anyone who's visited the beach knows, the hotel still stands. The familiar Best Western Edgewater is still sitting there adjacent to City Beach, and construction has not begun. Avril Hospitality did receive, it was not a unanimous vote, it was 4-1 from the Planning and Zoning Commission for another 1 year permit extension for their project. I guess what does a company need to do to get a permit extension like this? What was their, they had to prove what, Zach?
Yeah, so to get an extension of a conditional use permit, an applicant needs to show in some kind of demonstrable, substantive way that they have diligently pursued completing the project.
Yeah.
So moving forward on it in some concrete way that the city can say, okay, yeah, you're working on it. I see you need more time. Here you go. Here's another year.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, Jack, the company Avril, they sought and received an extension of that CUP from 2024 to 2025. From 2025 mm-hmm. to 2026. So they already got an extension.
Yeah.
Once before. And so this just pushes that again another year. And the discussion at the P&Z commission meeting was, you know, how do you assess whether substantial progress has been made? How can you sort of objectively assess diligence?
Mm-hmm.
And the company representative, Ben McGran, spoke to the P&Z and said, well, look, I mean, the market's terrible. You know, the financing is very difficult right now. The economy is kind of in turmoil with all this, you know, sort of at the federal level. Construction material prices have been a problem for years now. So that has delayed the ability to, you know, turn dirt.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, he argued that Averill has pursued a lot of design and engineering work, trying to, you know, refine their plans. Mm-hmm. They've coordinated with city staff on a number of different things. They've taken part in workshops, you know, and like sort of city outreach efforts. They've, you know, worked with consultants. So basically what he described was a lot of behind the scenes things, which required, you know, a lot of investment. So $1.8 million, I think he said they've invested so far, and about $800,000 of that just in the past year alone. But again, spent on things that you don't see on the ground.
Yeah.
But he argued, you know, that that represents a diligent pursual of completing the project. And that was all well and good for, you know, most of the commissioners. They came around to the idea that, yeah, that did represent an earnest effort to pursue the project. However, there were a couple of sticking points that came up during that sort of outline of what progress should look like.
Aha.
A couple of the background things were that, so Averill filed for its building permit in December of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they filed for that permit in December so they could get in under the deadline for the new development impact fees.
Right. Yeah.
So the city had to raise its development impact fees, which is, you know, the amount of money that a developer spends to the city to sort of compensate for the increased load on infrastructure, you know, whatever, like the impact of the development. I mean, it's one of those rare government terms that actually means what it says. It's a development impact fee. So it's a fee for the impact of development.
Yeah.
But the city hadn't raised those for many, many years. And so it came up last fall,
yeah,
that we needed to do a pretty substantial increase on those fees to bring them more in line with the actual cost of development to the infrastructure and to the community at large. Averill testified at those meetings where they discussed raising those fees and said, look, I mean, can you extend this into January of 2026? Because our project is on the hook for about 300 something thousand already under the old impact fee schedule.
Yeah.
If they put those fees into effect last September, I think it was, as they were going to, then Averill's impact fee payment in January would have gone from $300,000 to $1.3 million.
Yeah.
So they said, please push it back to January. While the council was, you know, tried to underscore, like, we don't make decisions based on one applicant, you know, it turned out that it worked out pretty well for Averill. So they filed their permit in December, locking in essentially those lower impact fees. Those fees went into effect in January. For developments that are filed after that period.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, or a little bit after, they filed for a demolition permit, which is the first step, right? They have to tear down the existing structure.
Yeah.
So the Best Western and the former Trinity restaurant site, that all needs to be torn down. The site has to be cleared. I mean, all the things you do to actually develop a building, you got to get rid of everything that was already there. So they had this demolition permit, and they had their building permit. And there's a fee also attached to the plans that they have, and that's a plan check fee. And this is a fee that you pay once you have your building permit, that you pay the fee, and then that triggers the process of the city reviewing your plans.
Uh-huh.
And for this project, it's like $208,000. So you had all these different things in motion, right? You got the CUP, which was still in effect.
Uh-huh.
You had the building permit, which had been filed for in December. And then you had the development impact fees that went into effect in January. And then you had this fee you need to pay to get your plans looked at. Uh-huh. So all that was in motion. However, the deadlines for a couple of these things were coming up really quick. So the CUP would have expired in July.
Mm-hmm.
The building permit would have expired on June 29th, or will expire on June 29th.
Mm-hmm.
And that plan check fee needs to be filed by then too for that permit.
Yeah.
Averill's looking at the situation saying, we can't build the building right now. Like, the demolition permit expired without any demolition, obviously.
Yeah.
So they're saying we need another year. Well, some of the commissioners, or at least one of the commissioners, was like, well, okay, this is all well and good, but you need to pay this plan check fee at least.
Yeah.
The $208,000.
That's Scott Torpy.
Scott Torpy, Commissioner Torpy.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to put a condition on the extension.
Right.
Saying, like, I'm fine with extending your CUP. However, to show me that you're actually diligently pursuing this and you're actually committed to the project, pay the plan check fee by June 29th.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll give you another year. Well, McGran, you know, representing Averill, said, it's better for the city if we don't pay that, which, you know, is always kind of a head scratcher when a developer says it's better for you if I don't pay a fee.
I read that quote, and I would, can you explain his reasoning there? Why would it be better for the city not to receive those monies at this time?
It goes back to that development impact fee issue.
Okay.
So as I mentioned, you know, they filed their permit in December to get in under the deadline of the increased impact fees. If they don't pay the plan check fee and they let their building permit expire, then they have to refile for a building permit. And then that will put them under the new fees. So essentially what he was arguing was, look, we can give you $208,000 now.
Uh-huh.
Or we can not give you $208,000 and then give you $1.3 million later under the new impact fees.
Right. Uh-huh.
And, you know, Commissioner Torpy, I don't think, was convinced by that because he was the one member of the commission who didn't vote for the extension based on that condition. So that was an interesting little debate point that came up. Huh. So as it stands right now, the building permit looks like they're going to let that expire.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, June 29th is just around the corner. Looks like they're not required to pay that fee as a condition of the extension. So why would they? And the conditional use permit is now pushed out again until next July.
Huh.
And there is no demolition permit that I'm aware of.
So yeah.
They'll have to refile for that. They'll have to refile for a building permit, and then they'll be under that new impact fee schedule for the next year.
Yeah. So the I guess the long and short of it is we don't expect to see anything happen to that to the Best Western Edgewater Resort building this summer.
If past is prelude,
yeah,
it's hard to tell if we'll see anything happen at all even next year. I mean, there is nothing in the code that I'm aware of, and that this was discussed a bit at the meeting, but there doesn't seem to be any sort of hard and fast requirement of or cap or whatever on how many times you can file for an extension.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to pass that test of, you know, are you diligently pursuing the project? You know, is a year extension on a permit warranted given the work that you've already put into it?
Yeah.
So it's conceivable that they could come back again next year and say, you know, we worked hard on it this year. We still couldn't, you know, conditions have still not, you know, been favorable for us. The price, construction prices, you know, you name it, whatever, like whatever reasons they want to give. They can still say that, yeah, I mean, we're working on it, but we need another year. So we could see this pushed out to 2028.
Mm-hmm.
It's unclear. And the commissioners haven't put any conditions on it, obviously. So, I mean, who knows? It's anybody's guess what we see down there.
Yeah.
There's another little weird thing that kind of popped up in the staff report for that meeting. And it was alluded to during the meeting, but not in any detail. And that is that as Averill's been apparently struggling to get their ducks in a row to pursue the project that they, as proposed,
yeah,
you know, which is this almost 300,000 square foot.
The huge full demolition. Yeah.
Like 180 something rooms, you know, yeah, condos, like two restaurants, this big sort of plaza, stuff, you know, like watercraft rental. They have a huge proposal, you know, that's been floated around for a couple of years now. I think we've all kind of become familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
So as they've struggled to line up the financing, get everything organized to really get down to brass tacks on that project, they've been also having conversations with city staff about an alternative project, which is a lot more modest in comparison. And what that would entail was basically turning it into a restaurant sort of kind of area with five floors of condos above it.
Hmm.
So radically different project. I haven't seen any renderings of it. I mean, it was kind of just mentioned in passing in the staff report that there was this alternative proposal potentially on the table. They haven't filed for any permits for it. They haven't done anything, you know, substantive for that. I think they just floated it out there, you know, as like, well, we could also do this if this other thing doesn't happen.
Yeah.
If they were to go that route with that other project, which is very condo heavy, I mean, as far as I could tell, almost entirely condos. If they went forward with that, the CUP that they just got extended would be moot because that's a completely different project.
Yeah.
So they'd have to file for a totally different CUP, start the entire process over again. So that, again, that isn't happening based on what the decision was at the last P&Z meeting and based on what the, you know, the Averill company has indicated that they are going to continue with the project as they've proposed it already under this extended CUP, but if everything falls apart for whatever reason, there is this sort of plan B that's floating out there in the ether that we could see them kind of pivot toward. But again, would require a restart to the entire development process.
And that would mean, I mean, I guess you haven't seen the plans. Nobody has, because there are no plans, I guess.
It sounds like it's been a very sort of informal conversation as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, but it would be, I think the quote here from the city staff is that, yeah, that there's no mention of a hotel at all for the other plan, at least in the,
right,
according to the city staff.
Right.
So that would be a dramatic change from what's been set before the public and before the city thus far.
Right. And so meanwhile, yeah, I mean, like, to get back to what you were saying, like what we might expect to see there, I would expect to see nothing there.
Yeah.
It's going to remain kind of sitting fallow, until they can get their, I mean, at least till the demolition permit is acquired and then they actually start tearing stuff down. I mean, I came back to the Reader when I moved back home in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say when I got here, people had already been talking about the Best Western, the Edgewater, getting torn down.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels to me like we're looking at about 10 years almost, for as long as we've been talking about tearing this building down.
I think it's been at least a discussion point. Yeah. The prior owners had been talking about it for a while.
And it did operate
during
that time. But I mean, they have since closed it. I mean, Averill's closed the hotel.
Yeah.
And the restaurant space. And that was another thing that P&Z Commission Chairman Mose Dunkel,
mm-hmm,
that was one of the things that he kind of, that struck him as significant, quote unquote, in terms of progress toward completing the project, was closing that facility. You know, saying that, well, I mean, if I owned this building and I had a business in it that was generating revenue and I closed it down, that indicates to me that you are serious.
Yeah.
That you want something to happen here. So, although he did admit in his statement that he was reaching when he described that as a significant progress.
Yeah.
So,
you may not know this, but I mean, what would have happened? Suppose the commissioners had just turned it down. I mean, what would have happened then?
Because
it doesn't seem like they're making any rapid movement here, or the moves they are making aren't moves that require a conditional use permit at this time.
Yeah. And this is the issue with that sort of standard of like, what's diligent. I mean, how do you define that? And it's going to be subjective based on the commissioners on the board at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, imagining that there were maybe some different commissioners or the commissioners had a different mood that day, they could have very well said, okay, great. I mean, you're spending money on things, but we don't see that. We don't, mm-hmm, there's no actual physical changes to the site. I mean, you could be telling us lies for all we know. I mean, we don't see who you're paying or what you're paying them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that argument could have been made and they could have said, sorry, but you don't get an extension on this CUP. So you got to do what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And at that point, if they couldn't make anything happen by the extension, like the deadline in July,
mm-hmm,
then that conditional use permit would have expired.
Mm-hmm.
So Averill would have been left with no conditional use permit. If they let the building permit expire, they would have had no building permit. They obviously didn't have a demolition permit. So it would have essentially restarted the project, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, based on my reading of it, I mean, if you don't have those critical permits, then you don't really have the ability to do anything on the site. I mean, they would still own it.
Yeah.
But as far as pursuing a large scale development, there would have been, you know, back to the drawing board,
mm-hmm,
literally. Well, maybe not literally. They would have had the drawing still, but
okay,
they would have been back to the beginning of the permit stage.
Yeah. Which
would have been expense. I mean, it would have added expense upon expense. And one of the themes of Averill over the years, I mean, you go back to, you know, the discussions about parking, the discussions about variances, talking about the impact fees, talking about the RV park. That's another element, mm-hmm, to this whole thing, the city-owned RV park across Bridge Street. Averill has a consistent history of working with the city on every time there's something that comes up, they say it's going to make the project unviable. That they need this or that or this exemption or this extension or this, you know, variance or this element of the city to give them something or trade something or whatever. So This is far from the first time that Averill's come to the city saying, you know, we need you to make us some kind of accommodation here. And I wonder if that's going to become an issue if they try to file for another extension. or if that conversation is going to come to bear, if they have other requests going forward for changes. I mean, they tried to get the city to basically give them the RV park at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And that discussion really didn't go very well for them, for the company. The city council roundly rejected that idea of working on any kind of sort of ownership, transfer, lease, sale, partnership, whatever with Avril. So that's something else that's happening too, is that the RV park project next across the street from Avril, that's actually progressing.
Right.
So in the absence of Avril's physical, like visible motion on the site, on that side of Bridge Street, the city is actually going to start doing some major work on the RV park across the street.
Yeah.
And there's going to be they're going to be at the farmer's market to talk about that.
Yeah. There's actually the kind of transitioning. I think there's a survey. Is it out now? RV park, and I think city beach parking survey, that the city has put online. You can find it, I'm sure, at the sandpointidaho.gov website, looking for public comment on how the RV park and sea beach parking should be developed. One question, I guess, about, I don't know if this is a question about the city or the county or the state or what, but this is, the Best Western Edgewater, the property that Avril now owns, is one of the most visible buildings, publicly visible buildings in town.
I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that it's in the top tier of all properties in the state.
Yeah. And that's one, and it's currently just unused and unoccupied.
Right.
And that's one of, just off the top of my head, I think three or four properties in the in historic downtown, one of which right across the street from this radio station, that's just vacant.
Right.
I mean, there's a big hole in the ground at the corner of Bridge Street and First Avenue, and there's nothing in the location adjacent to the Cedar Street Bridge on First Avenue, which provides us a nice view of the creek from the radio station. But that used to be a building,
right?
And can the city, or is there some authority that can take some action to kind of spur on the owners of these properties to start building, to create something there, is that outside of the city's authority?
Well, I mean, you kind of got me there. I mean, also don't forget about the other hole on Bridge Street and First Avenue.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So we have three very prominent properties all within kind of the Sand Creek sort of City Beach area that have just been producing nothing for years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not nothing, but not nearly as much as they could. I mean, they're not having the impact that they very well should.
Yeah.
But as far as like any kind of municipal government authority to like force somebody to build, I'm not aware of anything like that. I mean, I maybe eminent domain.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
I don't know. I mean, the city could take it over, but I don't think they could do that.
Mm-hmm.
There might be some, and I'm just kind of spitballing here with my non-legal expertise, but sometimes you can declare some areas like urban blight.
Right.
And that gives...
The word blight was coming to my mind.
That
as
gives
well.
Some leverage sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I think that if you own a property like that, I mean, you kind of have the right to do with it what you will,
mm-hmm.
within health and safety reasons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it is maybe testament to the difficulty of the market. And I think Commissioner Reed Weber, P&Z Commissioner Reed Weber, made that point as well when he was voting in favor of granting Avril that extension, was that it's very hard to build something right now.
Yeah.
And that could speak to the reality of why we have all these properties that really could be super high impact pieces of our developments just not being developed.
It's interesting.
And I can understand Avril, especially because they have estimated, last time I heard an estimate, that development of that property down there would cost, and to the extent that they have envisioned, would be something like $100 million. I mean, it's one of the most sizable, if not the most sizable, private development that I've ever, maybe other than Seasons.
Yeah.
in Sandpoint history.
Yeah, and that was
that's a major project and a super heavy lift. But it might be a case of, you know, having the tiger by the tail a little bit, where, you know, you got this amazing property and you have these big, huge plans, but, you know, the realities of the market and of construction prices and everything else, financing, getting partners to come in and invest are too great. You know, eyes were, what was it? What's the old saying? Like your eyes were bigger than your stomach.
Yes. Yeah.
Could be. I don't know. But the fact that we've had now two extensions approved means that the prognosis for like major progress, wait a year and see what happens.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, we've exhausted our allotted time as we so often do, but it was, it's an interesting subject. And another year without a hotel or restaurant at City Beach. The Renaissance Fair was last weekend. Did you actually go or?
I did.
You did?
I did. I hobbled around. I was like period authentic. It was like I'd been shot in the foot with an arrow or something. And so I hobbled around. I even dressed up.
Very nice.
It's one of my favorite events of the year, if not my favorite.
Yeah.
At this point.
I was out of town, but I would like to have gone. The photos in the reader are exquisite. Look at those. There's some really cool stuff happened there. And my last question, where are you off to next here, Zach? What's your morning hold? You said you were going to do kind of interesting.
Yeah, after we leave this, or after I leave the studio, you might be coming with me. I don't know.
I might.
I'm going to go down to Connie's just up the street here because Todd Achilles, independent running for Congress in Idaho, is in town to do a meet and greet until 10 a.m. So I wanted to go get a look and see what Todd Achilles is about.
I've never met him.
I have not either. And it's, you know, it's an interesting race, you know, going into November because we were talking about this, Jack, prior to coming on the air, is that this time around for the November general election, we seem to have an inordinate number of serious independent candidates for Congress, for governor, you know, down to the state legislature here in our district. So I'm fascinated by the idea of all these independents kind of stepping into the race in a bigger way than they have in the past. And it's, you know, somewhat unusual to have a U.S. Congress candidate come to Sandpoint to hang out with us in the morning at Connie's. So might as well take advantage of the opportunity. So that's where I'll be going next.
Sure thing. Well, there you go. So you can, that's open to the public. You can go down to Connie's and meet Todd Achilles this morning. He's scheduled to be there at about 10. Is that right?
Well, he's been there since 8.
Oh, he's been there.
But he'll be there till 10.
Okay. Well, then we better stop talking and head down to Connie's.
And I walk slow, so.
Okay. Well, thank you, Zach, once again for bringing us the news of the week here on North Idaho News of the Week. You can read Zach's writing in the Sandpoint Reader, where he is the editor-in-chief, and that's available on newsstands every Thursday. Okay, let's get off to the music and... And those of us going to meet Todd Achilles will go and try to do that right now. Yeah, thanks again, Zach.
All right, thanks, Jack.